You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network. Attention all theater lovers! This Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
You're listening to episode number 28 of Living the Dream with Rory O'Malley. If you like the podcast, remember to subscribe, rate, and review, or just tell your friends.
Audition, side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
Hello, dreamers. Rory O'Malley here. Welcome to Living the Dream. My name is Rory O'Malley. I'm the host of Living the Dream. And my guest this week is Christine Lakin, the best. One of my dearest friends. Christine and I met working for Mr. Gary Marshall at the Falcon Theater in Burbank, California on Happy Days the Musical. It always goes back to Happy Days the Musical. It was a great time in both of our lives, and I learned so much from Christine at that time. I was just getting into the business, and she was already a pro. She was in Step by Step on ABC TGIF, and if you're around my age, you know how big of a deal that is. She has been through so many ups and downs, and she is just so tough. She is so much fun. And I really have always looked up to how she conducts herself in this business. She's very proactive and she's always doing something. Right now, she is producing and starring in a TV show on Pop TV called Hollywood Darlings, which is her and Beverly Mitchell and Jodie Sweetin from Full House and Seventh Heaven. They are playing themselves in these kind of like heightened versions of themselves in a kind of a mockumentary. And it is so funny. And it is so much fun for me to see Christine Lakin being this crazy version of herself and like being in every other scene with another 90s star that makes me feel like a kid again. So I highly recommend her show. I'm so glad I got to sit down and talk with Christine about the old days and how far we've come, and how she stays so positive and proactive in our crazy, crazy industry. Here is my conversation with Christine Lakin.
And I have still not met your little one.
I know, just
she's
wait.
In the other room.
You're gonna die. You're gonna love it so
You think
much.
That I'm here for a podcast?
No,
I'm not.
You're just here to stalk my child.
Yeah, no, it's my day off. I'm in LA, and I'm here to see Georgia. Like, this is the plan.
Yeah.
So, hi, Christine.
Hi, Rory.
This is, we have to immediately talk about what just happened.
Yeah, we
do.
It's
one of the funniest things that's happened to me in a long time. So, I've known Christine for a long time. Since when? 2006?
Gosh, wait,
no.
Was Happy Days the first time we worked together?
Yeah, but I remember I met you during Cindy and the Disco Ball.
Right.
One of your greatest roles, Cindy.
Pretty much ever.
Yeah. And you were doing children's
2005.
Theater. 2005. Yeah. And you were doing a children's show, and I was doing either a Truby show or maybe a reading.
I think
reading.
You guys had done Santa Claus is Coming to Motown recently, because I knew you from the pictures on the wall in the lobby.
Which is one of the things that many people know me from, is being in Gary Marshall's theater
right.
on the wall.
Yeah. And then we became brother and sister on stage.
That's right. And Happy Days the Musical.
Happy Days the Musical.
Yes. Which, you know, was a glorious, wonderful experience, and we did that together at Gary's Theater, the Falcon in Burbank.
And then I got to do, I think we did Oedipus together.
Oh, yeah.
Were you already in New York and you came back
yes.
for 2 weeks to do
I
that?
I quit the my
Getty.
Census job. I was working for the United States Census.
Oh, that's right. Oh.
And I, like, quit. So that I could like come and do the show and
be out at the Palisades by the beach, just so that we could go
yes,
perform a show.
Of course,
why not?
Why not? It didn't matter that
it's
I couldn't feed myself.
Good money.
Well,
back
for
then.
For a couple weeks.
Right, for 2 weeks. Yeah, 2 weeks.
2 weeks, great money.
Great, I'm going to just quit my job.
Then no job. Yeah, exactly. I made so many healthy decisions back then. But we got to work together at a really, I don't know, it was a very formative time for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had been in the business most of your life, but I still feel like for everyone who was coming from different parts of their career, that was still a very special time.
Oh, definitely. You know, I feel like for me, although I had had this career as a child, I've been acting professionally. When I say professionally, I mean paid for.
Yeah, yeah.
Since I was about 8.
Right.
And then, you know, had this long string of success on a TV show. Mm-hmm. Some of you might have watched it growing up, called Step by Step.
Oh, yeah, that one.
That one. on TGIF, and did that until I was 19. And then from like 19 until you and I met, which was, gosh, I guess I was probably 20. I'm going to date myself, 26 or 27.
Yeah.
I really, you know, I'd gone to college. I had been working. I'd done lots of guest stars and little independent films and things. A lot of failed pilots, but hadn't had another sort of big thing happen in my career.
Yeah.
And I always knew, like, theater has always been my first love. It's yeah. what I did before I even did commercials in Atlanta. I mean, I was in a theater company and... So I might have to take my dog out. I was in
it's all right. We have lots of dogs on Living the Dream. Is that Cody or no?
That's Cody, yeah.
Cody's
he's,
whining.
You know, he's
I've,
the problem
I've dog
child.
Sat for Cody before, so.
You know how crazy back. He is.
I know.
But theater has always been my first love, and I always knew that it would save me. Does that
yeah.
make sense?
Yeah.
Like, I knew that I could go back to that, and that that would provide my soul with a sense of belonging and creating, and that it felt real to me.
Remind me why
I did this. Yeah, exactly. And that no matter what else in my life, even if I decided to like get out of the business professionally and go do something else, that was always a safe space for me.
Right.
And I credit Gary's Theater. I credit the Falcon and the opportunities that started even with Cindy and then came through Happy Days. And then after that, the Trubies, which I did 12 or 13 shows with.
Right.
Met my husband on that stage.
Yeah.
I mean, I really credit him and that whole environment with giving me some of the best friends of my adult life.
Yeah.
And I think Gary always, you know, laughed about how the theater could provide kids with like looking up from screens and being like, what is that up
yeah.
there? You know, to Cody, this is not your podcast, sir.
Cody, I think what she's saying is wonderful, and I don't know why I disagree.
You're just, I know you want to be the star here, but look, we all can't be the star, all right? Sorry, your time is not here yet.
You have two cute puppies.
But I think, you know, I really do credit him with providing that space for me, even though he probably had no idea he was doing it, but man, I needed it.
Yeah.
I really needed it at that time.
Yeah.
Because I think I could have gone a whole other direction of self-loathing and...
Yeah.
Maybe some really bad choices.
Yeah.
And some bad behavior.
Yeah.
You know, well, it's easy in this town.
Well, I mean,
you know,
in this town, and especially being a child actor, like, it's highly publicized, a lot of mm-hmm. of kids who have gone into the business, had great success, and then had a lot of difficulty afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think, besides Gary and that family, which I think was the same for me, what do you think made you
stay off the drugs?
Yeah.
Get out of the gutter and stay
yes,
off the drugs?
Yes.
I have a real theory about why I did and why I think a lot of other child actors maybe didn't. And it's only my personal opinion. I'm not a doctor. Go ahead and say that. My husband is a psychologist, but
right.
this is not his opinion either.
Right.
I think for a lot of young people who start out in this career, and especially who have success very early on,
mm-hmm.
there are a couple things that happens. You're thrust into an adult environment at a very young age, an environment that doesn't necessarily always have your best interests at heart, depending on who the people are that are the producers of that show or production, you know, who your advocates are, your child, your welfare worker, your teacher, or your parents, and I
right.
say, I think parents is probably the most important in that
Absolutely.
Equation, because they're really the ones that can put their foot down when the, you know, the company or the production says, actually, we just need to go a few more hours. Is it okay if we just bend the rules a little bit? well, you get so many people bending the rules and bending the rules, and then all of a sudden you get a kid who is absolutely, utterly exhausted all the time and has no real life. So even if you're making a lot of money and you turn out to be 16 or 17 and you don't have that parental guidance kind of helping you also live a normal life, then, you know, this business is fickle. We all know that as adults. When you choose it as an adult, I think you kind of, even if you're 19 and you're choosing it, I think you know that you're going to face some hardships and some ups and downs. When you're 6 or 7 or 10 and it just comes to you and you weren't working for it, it just kind of happened.
Right.
And then it all goes away and you think to yourself, well, what did I do wrong?
Right.
Then I think self-doubt can really start to creep in. And I think for a lot of people, their self-worth is wrapped up in this thing that they did. And that now is no longer providing them opportunities. And it can just be very confusing. And then you're left with this, maybe this money that, you know, I think can have this weird misplaced kind of, it can be a weird or misplaced relationship, especially with the people that are helping you manage it.
Yeah.
So you have, you know, great parents like mine who basically, I look back on that now and I think, God, how did they know?
Yeah.
How did they know to make all the right decisions?
Yeah.
Because I'm a parent now, and I just hope I'm at least doing half of them right.
Yeah.
But to have a kid, I'm their only child. My parents are not in the business. We lived in Atlanta. I auditioned for this TV show, and I got it. And they were like, okay, well, let's just do this in the best way possible. How did they know any of this? There's no manual. So I credit them a lot with, they gave me a real life in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And my time on the show wasn't my whole life, and they wanted me to have, you know, an education, and I went back home, and I had, like, I went to proms, and I was in the school musical at home, and I had opportunities to know that there were differences in life, and that when one thing stopped being fun, you had to stop doing it and look for another path.
Right.
And I think that was one thing that was really helpful for me, is that I didn't have all my self-worth wrapped up in that job. So when that job ended, it was sad, but it wasn't devastating to the core of my being.
You knew who you were as a person beyond that.
Totally. And okay. I was going to go off to college. College was very important to my parents that I went. So I had other things occupying my time and my mind. You know, they were wonderful at investing and set aside a nest egg so that I don't have a student loan.
Yeah.
That was probably the... like one of the greatest things they did for me is that I set myself up to be able to go to college.
Right.
Which is cool. So, you know, there are those things. I also think though that, you know, I think there are some people that are just dispositioned to find trouble wherever it is. And I don't think it matters necessarily if you are a child actor or not.
Yeah.
I think what we do for a living is difficult, because it is transient. Mm-hmm. And it is unsure and uncertain, and it's kind of the highest of highs and the lowest of lows. And I think that as an adult in choosing this business, because I didn't choose it, it kind of chose me as a child. And then I had to kind of choose it again as an adult, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
And I still, to be honest, I still struggle sometimes with choosing it because I've realized, oh God, I'm at a certain age in my life where if I had chosen a different business 10 years ago, I would now probably be a vice president of schmuckety schmuckety schmuck. Right. You know what I mean? But I'd have an office and I'd know how much money I was making every year. And I
and could schmuckety go... And schmuckety schmuck has great benefits.
Great benefits. You know exactly how much you're making. You can say so on your tax return if you want to buy something like a car or a house or go on vacation. You know exactly when that's going to be.
I think that like what I'm realizing is that sometimes, you know, when you do a mortgage calculator or you do like something where you have to put in what you make every year, you're like, this is a crapshoot.
It's a crapshoot.
I don't know what I'm going to make this year. I have no idea. I mean, it makes you realize that so many other people can just go, oh yeah, this is what I make. So I'll either make this or more at the next job because, you know, then I'll just go on to something else.
Right.
Obviously, there's uncertainty for everything, but even when you are decades into this career, you don't know what a year can look like.
No, and I think that is probably, you're hitting the nail on the head with what is so difficult. This isn't a meritocracy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't win based on merit or how hard you worked or sometimes even how much longevity you've had.
Right.
Oh, you've done 14 pilots? Okay, great. You know, 12 of those did not go, but you've done that many. Right. We should give you a show. Actually, it doesn't work that way at all.
Yeah, it's not like, and once you hit 15, we're like, just give it to
just her. Just give it to her. She might
She's
as well.
She's clearly talented. No, it's...
It's hard. And it's hard. So, you know, and then there's always like the close calls. There's a show that's starting to air their promos. And it was a show I tested for this year. And it was, of course, it comes down to me and one other person, and the other person got it. And now, like, it's going. And I'm going to, like, see it on TV. Yeah. And I'm like, oh.
I know.
You know? Yeah. It's how many times, it's like, don't cry for me, Argentina. I mean, like, this is what we do in this business. So it's not like I'm
expecting anyone to feel bad. But there are plenty of, like, good TV shows that I have a little trouble watching.
Sure. Sure.
Because I'm like, oh, yeah, I don't remember that audition. You know, like, it's hard to get away from it. It takes practice, and you have to kind of separate yourself from it. And then all of a sudden, you're like, okay, it's a good show. I'm going to get over the thing that happened 3 years ago.
Right. As you know how much money all those people are making.
Yes, yes, exactly. But how wonderful that you were able to have an experience as a kid. And I love how you say that you had to kind of decide to be an actor again.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
And I have to decide every day to go back to work and just put on my actor shoes and decide that I'm going to go on this audition and I'm going to, like, give it everything I have and really work on a character. And because that's the thing for me is the work has always been the fun. I've never had a problem working.
Yeah.
I love to work. Right. I love to voice over when I'm doing that. And I voice audiobooks and I'm finishing an independent film right now. And... I mean, all the stuff with Hollywood Darlings has been the most fun I've had in probably 10 years as an actor, which I can get into in a minute. But that is all fun. For me, the auditioning is the work. That's the hard.
Yeah.
Is, you know, getting 6 or 7 pages of sides and learning that the night before and trying to create a character, sometimes out of very little or almost nothing.
Yeah.
And then as a female, making sure that I look good enough to go on this audition and the time and the money it takes to just try to go get a job. That's what's like a little, you know, pounding the pavement is like a little daunting for me at this age.
Yeah. I had to audition once for a transgender character, or I shouldn't, it was a drag character.
Okay.
And so I had to dress as a woman for the audition, and it literally changed my perspective on what actresses have to go through. Because,
really?
Yes, because I've never put on makeup
at
all
to
go to an audition. I'm like, oh man, I gotta iron that shirt. You know? Like, that's it. And the fact that, like...
Oh, I gotta wash my hair and take a shower?
Yeah.
Oh, all right. Like, it might take 5 minutes.
Oh, jeez. Really having to put a lot of effort into this one. I gotta shave? That's like the extent of it. So the fact that I had to, like... I had to go buy makeup. I had to figure out what this character would do, how much to wear, and nothing when I went shopping was in my size.
Oh God, don't you hate that?
H&M does not have big enough clothing.
Not okay.
That is ridiculous.
I understand your pain.
I was like, this is insane. Like, I'm not the biggest girl ever. Why is their largest size not fit me at H&M?
Well, and then I'm on the other end of the spectrum. Where I'm just I'm a very tiny person in I'm 5'1", and I go to things are always way too long. I can't buy pants, and I can't buy long skirts, because I know I'm going to have to get them altered.
Right.
And that's just another expense that
You're a wee lady.
I'm a wee lady.
You're a wee lady.
Wee tiny lady.
Okay.
But that's funny that I feel like I should make my husband do that, just so he has a little more respect. Anytime we go out to dinner and he knows what I've gone through to look that good.
Because I've always said that I have respect for it or you know, I feel bad.
Mm-hmm.
But not until you actually have to do it.
Do it.
And I was like, it was a lot.
Yeah.
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
And so I have a huge appreciation for you ladies, actresses.
Thank you.
So we've known each other a long time. I want to tell this story before we forget about what just happened
on the way here.
Because you've lived in the same gorgeous home.
Oh, thank you.
For a long time, right?
I have. Like, yeah. I bought that home when I was 22.
Right.
And it's a tiny little house.
This is where the smart parenting stuff comes in that you...
Yeah, I think so. I you know, I didn't waste my money on a lot of silly stuff, but I I was very house poor in my 20s because I decided to buy a little tiny house and...
Well, I was rent poor, right? So it's better. House poor in your 20s is pretty damn good.
Not too bad. But I didn't care if it... I didn't. It wasn't, you know, hadn't been redone with the finest of anything, and I knew one day I would have to put work into it and stuff, but I just loved the view and I loved the vibe and... and so I made a dumb, smart decision, which was like dumb luck. And I just thought at 22, this is what I should do.
Right.
And my parents were kind of like, are you sure? Right. That's a lot of responsibility. And looking back now, yes, I'm very happy I made that decision because I couldn't afford to buy now in Los Angeles.
No, so. It's unbelievable. But you, now that you have you're married and you have a child.
Yes.
You wanted to expand the house.
Yeah, because we just had two bedrooms and we had one full bath. And for anyone who's ever shared their bathroom with their child, it's fine for a long time. And then, but we'd like to maybe have another baby and, you know, maybe stay there for a little while longer. Yeah. So it was either sell and try to rebuy, which makes no sense at this point in time.
No.
Or, you know, maybe add maybe just like a little room over the top.
Right,
over
which
the
is what
we thought we were doing.
When I left town, I knew that you were going to add a room, you were going to do like something over the garage, and I knew that you were staying somewhere else.
Yes.
While that was happening. And so when we made the plan, we've been planning this for like a couple weeks now.
Yeah.
But when I remember yesterday thinking, you know what, I wonder if she's back in the house or not, because it's been 6-7 months.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought to myself, no, in Hollywood Darlings, she filmed a scene in the kitchen, so they must be back in the house. I literally, that's why I didn't text you or ask you anything. And that is my simple Ohio-raised brain thinking, you watched it recently, so that means it must have just happened recently.
Right.
Not that it was months ago
it. Yeah, because we filmed last fall.
Right. Right.
And then as I told Rory on the phone, and then a month later, we had to pack up all of our stuff and move out because they were going to start demo. So poor Rory, I get this text, OMG, LOL, your house is gone.
Your house is gone. I drove there and I was just having all this nostalgia. I was like, oh, there's where I went for walks with Cody, going up the beautiful hill. And I pull up towards the house and I see some like wood on some construction. And I was like, oh, they must still be putting some finishing touches on. And then I get a little closer. I'm like, oh my God.
Oh my God, it's fenced off. There's no roof.
Fenced off. I was like, how are we going to do this podcast? I was like, I think there's people working with hammers all around us. And then I realized there's no house.
There's no house.
You don't live there.
No.
I was like, that is not possible.
No, however, we had redone our one little bathroom.
Right.
Because it was like falling apart. And I didn't know at this point in time, like, how, you know, doing any kind of construction in LA takes forever just to get the plans approved and all this stuff. So in the meantime, I was like, well, screw it. If we don't get this plan approved, like, I don't want to live in this bathroom for another 2 years because it is a nightmare right now. So screw it. Let's just redo the bathroom. So we start redoing the bathroom. We do this really nice redo on our bathroom. And then all of our plans go through. And then they're like, okay, we're going to be tearing this roof off. And I'm like, here's the deal. I just redid that bathroom. You need to do everything you can to keep that thing intact because I just sunk all this money into it.
Yeah.
And my builder looked at me like I was crazy. But the entire house is in shambles and that one room is still standing. So we brought my mother-in-law and father-in-law over to see the house and stuff. And my mother-in-law's like, ooh, I should have gone at the restaurant. I think I have to tinkle. And I said, well, you know what, Barb? We have a bathroom.
That's what we got.
Yeah, and it was, I mean, it's, you know, it's actually still functioning, which I don't know how. It has no window, but it's functioning.
Well, you don't need a window.
No, you don't.
You don't need a window to function.
It's crazy.
In the bathroom. No, but it's funny just because I have so many memories of that house because you always had us over. I think one of the reasons that we had such a wonderful time at that period of time was because you always had us over to the house after shows.
Yeah.
And to have somebody in their 20s and to have had the kind of success that you had that was a part of what we were all doing, I think that really gave us a lot of hope and self-respect that we were a part of that with you. And I mean, you know, I grew up watching you.
Oh, Rory, you don't have to say that just because you're sitting here.
I'm not. And, you know, if I don't say that to you a lot, it's because, you know, I don't want you to, I want, you know, like, you're my friend, and that's, yeah, you know, how I know you, but, you know, TGIF.
Like, TGIF,
thank God,
man.
It's Friday, and I grew up watching all of those shows. I knew who you were. And
so did I, though.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I mean, seriously, we had something called Book It, which I don't know if you had.
Book It.
Do you remember Book It?
Was it Pizza Hut?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, sit around, read five books, then you get like, you get little stars on your button, and then you can turn your button in and get a free personalized pan pizza.
Oh my God, yes.
I was a voracious reader. So
I was a voracious eater.
So it would have been just a match made in heaven had we grown up together. Yeah. But I would have all these, I would like hoard my Book It pins. And then we would go to Pizza Hut and get the personal pan pizzas and take them home. And I would have my friends over. And my mom would let us eat our pizzas and watch TGIF.
Yeah.
That was my life. And then I got cast on a show that was going to be on that night. You have no idea. I was like, oh my God. Well, I've made it.
You've made it. Well, you did.
Well, I've made it. And I mean, if you could, well, if you can have that moment, one moment in your life, I think, whatever that moment is, you should really always hold on to it as an actor, because A, it means something, and it should mean something to you. And it doesn't matter if it ever happens again, because I feel like fame is so fleeting in this business. And as we get older, and as I say, as you choose it again, it becomes, yay, I booked that job. And then the next day it's like done and over. Then you're like, all right, what's the next thing I have to do now? And we kind of get into this cycle of like disposable credits.
Yeah.
Where we don't really, I don't know. I think it's hard to sometimes appreciate how
savor
wonderful
that
and amazing something is.
Yeah.
I mean, you must have felt that way. Like opening night of Hamilton. It must have been like, holy shit.
Yeah.
I mean, Mormon. There have been lots of moments, you know?
Oh, yeah. No, absolutely. Well, and I've, you know, I've always said that no job can ever be compared to the other one.
Yeah.
Because it's unique and specific to itself. But when I was in Mormon, I would always say, like, this is the greatest thing that's ever going to happen to me in my career. There's nothing else that will ever compare to this. And now I know it's true because of Hamilton, because Hamilton is phenomenal. Hamilton is an insanely good job in every single way, but nothing will ever come close to opening the Book of Mormon, to going from being in, you know, my temp job,
right,
to being on opening the stage, opening night of,
and doing all of the workshops and seeing it through. You know, that's a lot of time and effort and energy.
It's a different investment, and you know, it's the same. I remember talking to Bobby Lopez, who wrote Book of Mormon with Matt and Trey, and he wrote Avenue Q, and I kind of had this conversation with him, and I said how I felt about Book of Mormon. He said, well, actually, that's how I feel about Avenue Q. Like, even as great as Book of Mormon is, and I'm sure he would say with Frozen and everything else that he's done, nothing will ever compare to the thing that made your dream come true.
Right. Because it's the first time it ever happens.
Right.
So, you know, it's probably like the first time when I watched my daughter the other day discover sour cream. And I had given her sweet potato fries, and there was just a little thing of sour cream on the side. It was for something else, but she started dipping her fries in there and sucked all the sour cream off and looked at me like, why have you been holding out? It's like that it will never be as good again. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Really, it's now the fries have just become a conduit for the sour cream. It's really all about the sour cream.
She's my kind of girl. Yeah. I can't wait to meet her. Let's talk a little bit about Hollywood Darlings, because I'm super duper obsessed with it.
Oh, thanks.
I have not gotten to talk with you about it yet, other than a few texts.
Yes.
I am absolutely, I'm not floored, because I know that you have it in you, and I've always known that, but I am just so impressed, and I'm blown away by it.
Oh, thank
not,
you.
Not be just because you are so funny on it, which you are. You are so damn good on the show.
Oh, start,
but
Rory.
But I don't know the story of how Hollywood Darlings, it's just like this house. All of a sudden I'm here, Hollywood Darlings just showed up. And
it
I was like,
okay,
this is what Christine's doing now.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is, but I know that you are in charge of it. I know that you are someone who's always had that drive. And I know that you, when you, that you just said that you love the work. You don't like mm-hmm. having to audition and look, you like working mm-hmm. and you're somebody who sits in a driver's seat when you have the opportunity.
Yeah.
So I want to know how Hollywood Darlings came into fruition.
Yeah.
And just, I want some stories because the 90s are back.
You're back.
Bringing them to me. And I'm so appreciative. So
put on your baby backpack.
Yes.
Break out your chokers. I'm going to take you on a ride.
I love it.
So, you know, I think for me, I'll give you the long and the short of it. For me, I've decided about 15 years ago that I wasn't going to just sit around and kind of wait for the phone to ring.
Right.
That I knew that, you know, what I do is a bit more unique than just playing the, like, pretty girl next door who, you know, is the girlfriend of the guy who's the lead in the thing. That's just not going to be my thing.
Right.
So I had to start creating my own opportunity. So right. I've done that in a couple different ways. And one was a web series I wrote and produced called Love and Lakin that you can see on YouTube if
yes.
you still want to see it. We sold it to Hulu, and that was kind of like, it's a farce on, I play a version of myself, but I play a really ridiculous kind of, it's kind of a mix of The Office and The Comeback.
Right. Yeah, yeah.
it's like, I play a very unself-aware version of myself. And it's about a girl who used to be on a TV show and thinks that she's still America's sweetheart and nobody knows who the fuck she is.
Right.
And she just continues to make this like ridiculous documentary about how to make it in the biz. And Jimmy Fox, who is the Hollywood Darlings producer, had seen it and was then in touch with me, I mean, several years after. I was set up through my manager and he wanted to meet with me and said I sat down with him. I said, all right, you know, I don't know who this guy is or what he wants to do, but I'll have a meeting with him. He took me to this really fancy place, in West Hollywood, and immediately I really liked him. And, we had a really nice chat. He loved Love and Lincoln. He thought it was super funny. He asked me all about it. And then he started to say, well, look, I have this idea. I want to put together a show of like a 90s dream team. And I'm looking to do like three or four girls that people would know from the 90s. I want to create, you know, a comedy. And I said, well, I love that idea. I'm not really into reality, if that's what you're thinking about doing. And he said, no, not reality, but maybe it's something like what you do with Love and Lincoln. Maybe it's versions of yourselves. And I said, all right, well, that's interesting to me. You know, let me know who else is into it and let's see if, you know, the dynamics work. So he went off and had a bunch of meetings and kind of then circled back a little while later and said, so I've met with Beverly Mitchell and I've met with Jodie Sweetin and they're kind of also interested in this. And maybe we could all just sit down and see if this is something that, you know, could work. And do you know them at all? I was like, yeah, Jimmy, I know them. We grew up in the same
right.
world,
right.
which is what is so funny. And I think
Jodie Sweetin being on Full House and
House,
Beverly Mitchell.
Being on Seventh Heaven. And what I think is so unique about our show, and always was from the beginning, is that the three of us all lived a very unique childhood. And we knew each other growing up, even though like we were in different sort of worlds. You know, Jodie and I were probably closer because we were on the same lot. We had same producers that produced
right.
our show. We were both
TGIFers.
Yeah. So we just had more crossover.
Sure.
I would see her more often. And we were in the same acting class for a while as kids. I went to her 15th birthday party. I mean, there was just a lot of... Beverly, I didn't meet till I was 19. But we had a lot of mutual friends in common. This is like kind of the thing, right?
Yeah.
So when you have this strange sort of shared experience as a young child, I think it will always kind of bond you in a special and unique way. And then we all kind of went off and did our own things and had kids and, you know, lived lives and all of that. So to get back together as adult women in our 30s was really great. It was kind of like we'd all gone and done other stuff. And at that point, Fuller House hadn't come back yet. It was sort of a rumor and it, you know, was matriculating. Beverly had sort of gone off and had her babies and was sort of in mommy land.
Right.
And I was at that time... with Brandon, and we were planning our wedding. So I didn't even have a kid or anything yet. So this took several years to kind of get going. And when we started pitching the show, you know, Jodi was still working in treatment, which was something she loved doing and worked in treatment for many years.
Yeah.
And, you know, we talked a lot about kind of where our lives were at that time and how our childhood sort of shaped us. And and the show just kind of started to formulate. And it wasn't until we had the relationship with Pop and we decided to go make the sizzle that we were all like, okay, wait, but what's the show about?
Yeah.
It's like that Seinfeld episode where they're like, it's about nothing.
Yeah.
And then the network people are like, huh? We had to really like figure out, are we all on the same page here? Oh God, I hope we're all on the same page.
Yeah.
And doing the sizzle, I think it was very apparent that the three of us had a great rapport. I think they saw that immediately. And then it just took a while for us to finally get the show
really
going.
You really do. You guys really have such a great chemistry together.
Thanks.
And it's not forced. You know, it's just, it's really easy. And because you are talking about your shared experience and where you are now, it's...
And look, we're all moms now, which I think is also another bond. Of course, we all are playing heightened versions of ourselves.
Yeah.
And Beverly does tend to be one of the more, she's kind of, you know, I would say straight-laced or square, or, you know.
Yeah.
But she's very, in real life, she's very type A and she's very organized and she's like super mom. Like she knows all the things and has all the gear and just like, you know, she is working it.
Right.
And it's admirable. I don't feel half as organized as she is. And then, you know, Jodi is kind of, her kids are a little older and she's sort of having this new kind of resurgence in her career with Fuller House. And she's kind of having like a second wave and and she's so thankful for it. And it's so awesome to see her doing that. And Dancing with the Stars, she just has like a swagger about her now, you know, that even when, I think when we were shopping the show, you know, things have really kind of changed a little bit for her. And, you know, it's awesome. Like she kind of has like a newfound freedom. She's not in mommy land as much anymore. Kids are kind of self-sufficient at this point. And then, you know, and then there's me. I'm like in the thick of it. I've got a 14-month-old. We are renovating our house. I have two insane dogs. My husband's in grad school, just graduated.
Aww,
which is awesome for him. But like in the thick of all of it at once.
Yeah.
And you know, and I tend to be a little more of the hippy dippy one of the group.
Right.
And
I was like, yes.
I am totally
get her new yoga.
Sorry guys. I also tend to be totally okay with making a fool of myself.
Right.
Which you and I, you know, I mean, having done theater,
breast milk isn't poured all over her head.
The end of this episode.
I don't know what I'll do.
But you know, this was a lesson for me in. I think you always have to create your own path, no matter what that is, because I think it's the thing that keeps us going as performers.
Right.
And you never know where that path is going to lead. Did I think Love and Lakin was going to eventually lead to Hollywood Darlings, which was eventually going to be on the air now? Absolutely not. But I knew it was going to lead me somewhere.
Right.
And I just think you have to try to open your own doors.
Yeah. What is it that you... I think that like people realize that or want to do that, but fear is so crippling.
Fear is crippling.
That it's really hard to kind of walk through that and say that you can do it or, you know, I always feel like I need somebody to give me permission.
Right.
Like, I don't want to be the one to say, do this. I want somebody to say, you can do this and I'll tell other people that I told them that you should do it.
And I think that is a hurdle that we all as performers have to overcome. When I first started writing, I was terrified. Because I was terrified that it wouldn't be any good.
Mm-hmm.
And that I would put all that, I would put this one great idea out on paper and I would never have another good idea. So I wanted to save it and wait and like wait till it was perfect and not have anybody read it. And not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's like we hold on to these things. And actually now, I mean, I've written 7 scripts on spec.
Right.
You know, it's still a process, but I've gotten better at it. I realize I have a plethora of ideas. The ideas will always come. There's always something new and funny and different.
Right.
And you actually don't grow, I think, as a performer unless you're putting it out there.
Yeah.
Because even with, you know, Worst Ever, which is a one of my other babies. Yeah. I started that as a live show. It was Worst Audition Ever, and then it went to Worst Ever, and we ran it for 3 years in L.A., and you came and did our, you know, our pilot for Pop, and it was so funny, and sadly, they didn't pick it up.
Right.
It's okay. Things happen.
Well, but I made a pilot. Yeah, you made a pilot.
For a network.
Yeah.
Cool, you know? And now we have it as a podcast, and I think, actually, and Ala and I laugh about it, my co-host, that we did it all in reverse. We, tried to make it like a this huge thing, and now we realize, oh God, the podcast is actually maybe the best version of
right.
it because it's so contained and it's really it's really fun to do.
Well, it's the funniest part of me contacting you and saying, like, would you do my podcast? I was like, yes, would you do mine? I was like, that
Nerds.
Is a scene from like some sitcom that
definitely
is
Portlandia.
Yes, like let's get together for lunch and do each other's podcast episodes.
Oh God, I hate us so much.
I got over the like, oh God, everyone has a podcast. You know, is there room for me?
Right.
And I realize, like, a podcast is just having a conversation. People can listen to it or they don't have to.
Right.
Like, it's not asking too much
right.
from people. And that's kind of why I like it.
Yeah.
But it's also a lot more than just coming up with 140 characters of a tweet
mm-hmm.
and putting it out there and saying, this is who I am. Like, I know that there are people who are listening and it's not, you know, millions, but it's, oh, I'm throwing things around your kitchen. Sorry. there are people who are listening who want to have these conversations.
Who want to connect.
Yeah.
You know? And I think I'm new to the podcast world, but from the people who have even contacted and just said, oh my gosh, I just listened to the such and such episode. That was so interesting. Or so-and-so had such a great point about that.
Yeah.
Or that was so funny. That means so much to me, you know, that even one person listened.
Yeah.
And here's my other thing. And I think we also have to stop putting so much pressure on ourselves.
Yes.
I call it the cupcake empire. You know how to bake, and you decide to make cupcakes for your friends. And your friends say, oh my God, these cupcakes are so amazing. You should turn this into a business. And then you start making cupcakes for parties. And then all of a sudden, you're trying to make a cupcake empire.
Right.
Not everything has to be an empire.
Right.
You can just make a cupcake and enjoy the cupcake.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like we're sort of, maybe we're just taught to try to make opportunities out of everything. And not that that's a bad thing. But I think you can also just enjoy things.
Yeah.
Enjoy doing them and not worry so much about the end result.
Yeah.
You know?
Absolutely. And I think that's a really, really valuable lesson for us, because anytime there's any opportunity, you want to jump at it, make the most of it, because of things like Love and Lakin turns, you know, that like you learn that lesson and you're like, oh, that could turn into Hollywood Darlings. This can turn into something. But it's, you have to have the practice of being present.
Yeah.
And for me, I have no idea why I'm doing this. I really don't. I thought I did.
But you look really cute in those headphones.
I've got I stole my husband's headphones, his Beats. I was like, oh, those are better for my podcast. They make me look professional.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I just started doing this, and now I'm realizing that I just want to have a conversation with friends for an hour.
People. Yeah.
And when I go to the stage door after the show, now there's at least one or two people every show who say, I'm listening to your podcast.
That's so cool.
I know.
It's really cool.
It's so great, because I know that this conversation that I've wanted to have with people my entire career, that kind of like I felt alone, like, ugh, I got to be tough, but I'm really scared a lot and don't know how to just be a person in this business. It's like, it's something I still struggle with, but I'm realizing that people are wanting to have that conversation too. And
And I think, you know, I think for anyone, any artist that's listening and, you know, that maybe struggles with, oh God, should I keep doing this or should I keep going? I don't think it matters what level you're on.
No.
You know, I think every single person in this business at some point thinks that.
Yes.
Even when they are super successful, even during their success.
And you're almost thinking, especially.
Yeah. And you're thinking to yourself, oh my God, but you haven't made.
Right.
I think it's a constant struggle. And, you know, I always go back to the work. because the work is what has always made me happy. And if it's not fun, you got to stop doing it.
Yeah.
You know, my husband and I, because as I mentioned, my husband and I met doing Truby shows.
Yeah.
And, you know, he has sort of taken a little sabbatical from acting so he could go back to grad school.
Right.
And just finished and is now getting into his internship and stuff. So he has a little more time freed up from writing 25-page papers. Oh my God. But super admirable. But he misses it. I know he really does, because he'll always have that artist inside him. And we decided that, you know, it's not about the money. It's not about going on these auditions in Santa Monica to go try to be the next face of Bud Light. Like, that's not the thing he misses. Mm-hmm. He misses getting on stage and just working something out, or, you know, doing a play. So we decided, okay, we're going to rent a space this summer. And we're going to invite a few of our friends on a random Wednesday night or whatever it is. And I'll get a sitter. And we're just going to have, like, a three-hour workout. It's not a structured acting class.
Yeah.
Bring a scene, someone can, you know, these dogs, I swear to God. Someone
good guard dogs, they're protecting the baby.
Someone can, like, cold read it with you, you could work on something, you could do a monologue. I miss the play.
Yeah.
I miss acting class. It used to be my favorite night of the week, because I knew that I just got to go and play. And I find that I've just been out of doing that for too long. Yeah. I think you have to remember to play, no matter what it is, because I think your work
alive
is better when you when you're pushing yourself to just do something different.
Yeah.
Even if it's not acting, you know, I have friends that are like, let's go take a painting class. Okay.
Right.
I'm a terrible painter, by the way, like a really awful painter.
Right.
Better with wine. But
right. Sure. If everyone's drinking.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but I mean, that's that I always say, like, it's good to have something that's not about being good at it. It's about what it brings to you artistically. Yeah. But I was going to say that Maria Bamford, that comedian, who she has a show, Lady Dynamite, on Netflix, and she's a genius comedian. She was on a podcast saying that she's going to UCB classes, like level one.
Right.
And I was like, can you imagine, like, showing up your first day? And a woman who's literally, like, a genius comedian who has her own Netflix TV show is like, you're playing...
Zip, zap, zap. No.
Yeah. Like, I can't really imagine that. But just hearing her say that gave me the thought and permission to be like, yeah, I should be, like, learning stuff. You know, I should be, you know, putting myself out there. I took a stand-up comedy class 2 years ago.
I know. I saw you perform. Yes, you were so funny.
You came to, I think, my second time going up.
I did.
And there were some other people from my class who performed that.
Yes.
And
some were, you know, some had their material a little more under wraps than others.
Right. I learned a lot from those people, not just from the teacher, but from like really brave people who were showing up to this stand-up comedy class who had never been on a stage before.
I know.
And I was like, are you crazy? Like, I didn't say it to them, but I was like, this is the scariest thing you can do. Like, to me it was, but to them, they're like, it's all scary. Like, this is, I'm either doing it or I'm not.
I'm gonna, you know, put myself, and this is in the deep end.
I like comedy, and so I don't, they didn't know any better.
Right.
You know?
Right.
Like, that you could just go and be with a group of people at the community theater.
And God bless that.
God bless that. Yeah. I learned a lot from watching them just jump off the deep end.
Yeah. And I give you a lot of credit for doing that, for that class. Yeah. And then getting up there and doing it.
Well, thank you.
I mean, of course you'd be funny. I've seen you do so much, and even your own one-man shows. But it is a different beast, I think.
It is.
And I, like, that's something that I could see pushing myself to do. But then when push came to shove of me going up there, I'm getting sweaty, honestly, just thinking about it. Like, that I watch Crashing, and I think Pete Holmes is so funny.
Brilliant.
And I have this love for his character on that show because he's sort of, like, not great. He's kind of like, he is funny, but he doesn't have any success.
Right.
And it's kind of,
he plays it well because he's an incredibly funny man who is playing this character who's, like, learning how to
Yeah, exactly.
Learning how to do what he does.
And I just feel like I would get up there and just, I can already envision myself bombing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Oh, I have, and I have.
And there you go.
Did.
There's the fear again.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, you, that kind of fear is like fear that you have to practice. You have to like really envision how badly it's going to go. And it takes a very imaginative, creative mind to have that kind of fear. And we got them, luckily.
Yeah.
But no, it's, I think that being around people like you, who have always pushed themselves to create, to put themselves out there, has always inspired me. You've always inspired me.
Oh, thank
you. And I'm so grateful for your friendship.
Thank you. I feel the same.
I'm so grateful that you brought Nicole Tom to my wedding.
My God.
We gotta tell a story. I just want to tell a story before we go. So you were in New York City for my wedding.
Yes, I was there for literally like 48 hours.
Yeah.
And it was about a month before I got married.
Right.
So Brandon couldn't come with me for some reason. I was like, I'm gonna go zip zap. I'm gonna into New York, back and, you know, go to the wedding. And randomly I get there and I'm sharing a room with our friend Anna.
Right.
And I see on Instagram that Nicole's in New York.
Right.
Now, she's
Nicole, who was on
The
Nanny.
Nicole Tom.
Yeah, she was the oldest
Nanny
daughter.
And the Beethoven movies,
And the
too.
Beethoven movies, of course.
So she had a recurring on Grimm, I think. So I thought maybe she was working, because she would come in and out of New York, and sometimes she would stay and audition there.
Yeah.
And she was just there for a couple weeks, but I saw on Instagram, I said, are you in New York? And she's like, oh my God, Christine. Yeah, let's meet up.
Yeah.
So she came over, and we ended up like going out to the village, and we went shopping, and we had oysters. And I said, well, I have to go to this, I'm going to this rehearsal drinks thing. It's probably okay if you come. I think it's at a bar. It's probably fine. You can come with me. You can be my date to that.
Yeah.
So she comes, and she met all of our friends and stuff. And then you guys invited her to the wedding.
Yeah. Gerald was like, oh my God, you have to come to the wedding tomorrow. And I mean, our wedding was like not like a sit-down dinner. It was just a big party in a hall.
Yeah.
But I still have friends.
She's like, they invited me. I'm like, are you sure?
Gerald definitely did. And I mean, because he was there when I wasn't there when it happened.
Right.
I was just so excited that she was there. And and all of our high school friends were like, you have all the child stars from the 90s there. I was like, yes, just wait.
Well, and then she's like, they invited me to the wedding. I don't have anything to wear. And my shoe had broken. The night, the strap or something broke, and I was like, crap, I gotta go buy new shoes. I was like, well, I gotta go buy new shoes, just come with me. We ended up going to Patricia Fields, who was the costume designer on Sex and the City. She had a store, and it's no longer there, which is so sad. But I really wanted to go and see it, so I bought some shoes. I said, oh, let's go into Patricia Fields, you'll love it. 3 hours later, Nicole and I, she is like buying out Patricia Fields.
Wow.
And we bought these ridiculous sparkle dresses.
Oh, they were
and
a
I
hit.
Was like, we have to go. I have to get ready for this wedding. And I mean, I almost missed it. I literally like walked in and sat down as you guys were going up the aisle.
Oh,
I mean,
my God.
It was not to be believed, but yeah, we had insane sparkle dresses on and we
Green,
just had,
had
so
a,
much fun.
Oh,
we
it
did.
Was,
I
it
just
was
posted
fun.
That picture actually
you did.
Not that long ago. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I mean, it was so much fun. And our buddy Gary was there.
Yeah.
It was a good night.
That picture of all of us with Gary is classic.
Priceless.
Yeah.
Really, really, really great.
I really do miss him a lot.
You know,
I think about him all the time.
I've been thinking about him so much, like, this month.
Yeah.
And maybe because it's coming up on a year. Maybe because it was Mother's Day, and I was thinking about how we did that movie.
Oh, my gosh. And you stayed with my parents
I
during Mother's
with your parents.
Day.
Like, was they, I mean, I...
My parents ask about you all the time.
We had the best time. I almost didn't come back. We filmed in Atlanta, and so I stayed at your parents' house in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And you were there for, like, a day.
Yeah, we, like, rotated in and out.
Yeah.
I came in, filmed for a few days, and then I think we were there, like, overlapped one night.
Yes.
And my mother, this is for all of you guys, my mother was so concerned about Rory, because she was like, well, when is he getting in? How is he doing at work? Does he need me to go pick him up? I'm like, Mom, he's a grown man. Like, he lives in New York City. I'm sure he's fine. But she was just like so overly concerned about wanting to make the experience
very
great
good
for
care
you.
Of me. And we sat in the back porch, the screened in back porch, and watched the birds, which I literally was like, this is like the zoo.
I know.
your backyard.
It's
kind of
crazy down there, isn't it?
It's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I sat there for hours just watching the animal kingdom of the sky.
I know.
Come feed at your bird feeder.
And I was just trying to suck my baby in because I was like 4 months pregnant.
Oh my
and
God.
Trying not to show it on screen.
Right. Right. Yeah, we both had scenes with Julia Roberts.
Yeah.
Oh, and we also were in Georgia Rule, but you yes. were actually in Georgia Rule. I was an extra. I've made up a backstory. I was your boyfriend driving the car.
Yes.
You were actually in the movie.
Well, I yelled slut, slut.
Yes, while I drove a car, you yelled slut, slut at Lindsay Lohan.
Yeah, and then she tried to run me over with a truck in another scene.
Right.
But yes, I believe that I agree with that you were my boyfriend.
I was the boyfriend.
Yeah, you're the boyfriend. We were definitely not having sex.
No.
Well, we were Mormon.
Yeah.
And we were very, very religious in that movie.
Yes. No, we had a... I mean...
We had never even kissed.
No.
We had probably not even held hands.
Clearly not.
No.
No touching. but we also did... Remember we did the reading of it?
Yes.
With
yes.
Jane Fonda.
Yes.
Felicity Hoffman and Lindsay Lohan.
In the upstairs of the Falcon.
In the upstairs of the Falcon at the rehearsal room.
Yes.
That was like one of the craziest days ever.
I
know.
I couldn't even believe that we were all in this... Like in the same room.
Yeah, there were like 12 people in the rehearsal room, including us and those three actresses with Gary and the screenwriter and just people reading the script. And I had highlighted all of my lines. I was reading the like heartthrob Garrett.
Right, that's right. Garrett, what was his name? Who did that part?
Garrett
Hedlund.
Hedlund. Insanely handsome, gorgeous man. I'm reading that part. With Lindsay
right,
Lohan.
Right.
And I have done all of my text work. I'm off book for this reading. And Lindsay Lohan can barely get through the sentences.
Like,
she literally had never read it before.
No,
or something.
She's like never read the script.
And she never looked me in the eye, and I was sitting right next to her, and I was literally performing like it was the audition of my life.
I know.
I'll never forget that.
Well, and then I got to set. There was one day I got to set, and I wasn't even supposed to be there. And I get a frantic call from Heather, his assistant,
right.
who was like, can you get here right now? I was like, where are you? And she's like, oh, we're up at Franklin Canyon. And I said, yeah, I can be there about 20 minutes. Get here as fast as you can. I'm like, okay. And I like ran over there, and like they're putting me in my Mormon outfit. I literally look like, I think I was 28, playing 16.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even a joke. I look... so young in this film, it's
you
ridiculous.
Do. You do.
And she was having a rough day, hadn't shown up for work one of those days.
Mm-hmm.
And they just had to film something, because if they didn't, they were going to shut the production down. So they take me to Gary, who was sitting under this tent, just as cool as a cucumber, as he always was.
Yeah.
And he's got a legal pad in front of him, and he's scribbling, you know?
Yeah.
And he had a toothpick in his mouth, like he always like would chew on something, he's scribbling, and goes, hello. Come here. And then he scribbles and he rips the thing off the legal pad and he goes, can you say this?
Yeah.
He literally wrote a scene.
Yeah.
Just wrote lines down on a legal pad and gave them to me. Chicken scratch. It looks like a doctor's handwriting.
Sometimes he would handle those off of before
notes.
We went on stage.
Stage, yes.
He'd be like, oh, here, say this line. Give it a shot. We'll
give
see
it
what
a
happens.
Give
you know?
It a shot. And I was like, yeah, I can say this. He's like, great, go in the bushes. You're looking at her. You're spying. We're going.
I remember
that
scene.
And I was like, okay. I'm in the bushes.
And it made it.
And it made it in the cut.
Made it in the movie.
It was just too funny.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Yeah. No. I miss him more than ever. It's really amazing the amount of people that he brought together and the wonderful,
unbelievable.
Just I mean, we're gonna be friends forever.
Yeah.
I mean that whole network of people are just the greatest folks.
Joe Boire and I talk all the time about like when we're having like rough days.
Yeah.
He's like, so when are we opening the pizza place in Ojai? You know, because that's the escape plan.
Yeah.
Is that one day we'll just open the pizza place and we'll all just move up to Ojai and be artists in this little community. And, you know.
Yeah. Well, it's
you
great.
Can come.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
I can't make the pizza, but I'll eat it.
Yeah. No, that's fine.
And we'll get book it.
We need voracious eaters.
Yes. And that's what I am. I will definitely eat.
Oh, God.
All right. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Of course. And now I'm going to do your podcast.
You are. It's so exciting. Can I tell people where they can find me?
Please.
So I'll just be totally annoying and tweet myself out right now.
Yeah.
You can find me on all social media at Yo Laken.
Yo Laken.
And check out my podcast too, because Rory's going to be on it. It's Worst Ever Podcast.
It's very exciting.
You can find us on social at Worst Ever Podcast.
I have a lot of Worst Ever options. I think I know what we're talking about.
I think you probably do too. Yeah. But I have some other stuff I want to ask you about.
Good. I'm a little worried, but you know, we'll see what happens. I love you. And it looks like we're going to get started.
Great.
The dogs are
and
ready
the dogs
for
are done.
Great. I love you. Thank you for
doing
this.
I love you too.
Audition side job, swimming upstream. Believe it or not, you're living the dream.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com.
If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but
yeah.
Not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.